you want to be a teacher's man, well, baby, you just dance again. Rock out the reason, rock out the rhyme. You better get me to school on time. Hello, and welcome to the Fundamentals Podcast. I'm your host, Harley. Joining me today to talk about the art of teaching is honorary fourth member of the Skip to the End podcast and co-host of the Sense in Numbers podcast, Ben Slaughter, otherwise known as Benny. When I spoke to Benny about what topic to go for, we had a few different ideas, and he threw out teaching as it's his job and it's something that he's very passionate about. And I thought, what a brilliant idea. It's always nice to get a topic where it's something that somebody does for a living, and particularly one that can have such a positive impact on people's lives if done correctly. And Benny shares his journey into that career, why he stuck with it, the current conditions that he's working under, which I think need to be addressed, and so much more. It's a really fascinating conversation, and I cannot wait for you guys to hear it. So without further ado, let's get to that conversation. This is Teaching with Ben Slaughter. Hello, Benny, and welcome to the Fundamentals Podcast.
Hello, Harley. Thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, it is my pleasure. So for anyone who doesn't know, you're kind of, I like to think of you as like the honorary Beatle of the Skip to the End podcast. Like, you popped up a few times. And we've been talking back and forth a little bit on different subjects. And one you threw out to me that I thought was absolutely fascinating and I'd love to chat about is teaching.
Yes, indeed.
So it's quite a broad topic. I thought to kick us off, I'd love to know, what drew you to teaching, and when did you know that you wanted to pursue that then as a career?
To be quite honest, the only other job I wanted to do was a marine biologist, and that was never going to happen.
Oh, wow.
And that's only because of my obsession with Jaws. But I always felt that my one occupation that would suit me would be teaching from a very early age. That's because the impact and influence that teachers had on me. Because I wasn't a grade A pupil at senior school. I had my ups and downs. And aside from my parents, who were incredibly supportive, the teachers that I had around me were just incredible. And I thought, if you can have that impact on someone's life, and that be your job, that's something I'd like to do. But I didn't get into it straight away. It took me quite a long time to get around to it, to be honest.
Oh, right. Okay. So what was the journey like for you then? So I'm assuming you have to go through university or things like that.
Well, I didn't start teaching until 6 years ago, and I'm 38, so it's quite late.
Oh, wow.
But to be quite honest with you, when I left school, I had quite a poor attitude. I didn't think that going to college straight away would be a good idea. So I skirted around that issue with my parents because they assumed that I should go to college. So I worked from 16 full time up until I think I was 27, and something just kind of gave. And I thought, you know what? I went to night school, did my A-levels, and then I went to uni part time and worked full time, which was just hideous. And I would not recommend that to anyone.
Wow.
And then I did my PGCE because my wife's in the Air Force, and we moved up to Lincolnshire years ago. And then I just completed my PGCE up here, and it just felt the right time. And it was something that I've never regretted. The journey, the experience, any of it.
Yeah. I mean, that is quite unusual, as you say, from what most people do. But I love that, because I think that shows that it wasn't like a sort of snap decision or something you did at a young age and then you kind of end up regretting it years later, as is often the case with a lot of people I know who've done uni courses. It's not always the case, but most people I think find that they get halfway through something and they think, ah, actually I'm not enjoying this anymore. So to do it when you're a little bit older, a little bit wiser, I think it's really sensible. So what sort of you could take that as whatever way you want.
No, I'll take that as a compliment. It's very rare that people will refer to me as sensible, so thank you very much.
You're very welcome. But so you mentioned it came from a place of, I guess, almost like nostalgia, like you're looking back and thinking, well, I want to have that impact on someone else, which is brilliant, and I want to tap into that. So can you think of any teachers perhaps in your childhood then that kind of made you think like that? Are there any kind of standouts?
Absolutely. We had a form tutor for 5 years of senior school called Mr. Edwards, and he was without doubt one of the most patient and understanding people I've ever met, because like I referred to earlier on, I was a pain in the backside at school simply because I could do things. I just chose to take the path of most resistance. And he was very patient, very understanding. And he kind of ignored the part of me that liked getting into trouble and concentrated on the good part, you know, good aspects of my character. And I gave him a torrid time. And I'm not proud of that, but I gave him such a torrid time. And it didn't help that he bore quite a striking resemblance to Viggo the Carpathian from Ghostbusters 2.
Oh, wow.
Painting. So we used to chant Viggo at him all the time. And we were terrible, but he was incredibly patient with me. And in the end, it all came to a head, and he had a word with me, sorted myself out, and I came out with some decent GCSEs. And I'll never forget that. And there was another teacher called Mr. Dobson, he was an English teacher. And he's somebody who developed the kind of social interaction first, and then developed the learning relationship afterwards. And he was so good at getting everyone on side and everyone to believe in what he was teaching, purely based on developing those relationships. And that's something that I tried to do now. So it was a really important experience being taught by those kind of people.
Yeah, it sounds it. I mean, so I was thinking about today, actually. I would always think that patience is something you definitely need when it comes to being a teacher then, but is that something you have naturally, or is it taking a little time to develop?
I am quite possibly one of the most impatient people that I know, that anyone knows. And I don't know how I do it.
Right.
I believe, and this is going to sound incredibly cheesy now, but I believe that what we do in the classroom is incredibly important and will impact further on down the line. So I have to remind myself almost on a minute-to-minute basis, calm down. It's not important that they haven't done it right the first time. And I almost remind myself of what I was like at school. But there are times when I just have to shut down. And it's nothing to do with them, but 30 voices at the same time. It's challenging the best of times, but it's good for me. It's good.
Yeah, it sounds almost like weirdly therapeutic.
Oh, it is.
Like it's forcing you to develop these qualities.
But it really is.
But that's awesome. And I love what you said a minute ago. I don't think it's cheesy. I think that's such an important, I guess, philosophy to have in teaching, is to, yeah, like you said, think about the long-term implications of your actions and your behavior. It's so vital. So what ages are you teaching currently?
I currently teach year four, which is ages 8 and 9. So like kind of the second year of primary. They're a lot more aware and savvy than I was at 8 and 9. They're still children, and there's still things that they are unaware of. But they are so sharp. And that could be down to many things, exposure to, you know, media and social media, et cetera, et cetera. But some of them are like years ahead of where I was, or children that were my age back then.
Right. Does that impact then how you teach them, or how you sort of talk to them?
It does. And I think a lot of people would categorize my teaching style or behavior management as quite unorthodox, because I'm not one of the, there's so many myths and beliefs about teaching that are incredibly flawed. And one of them is you shouldn't smile until Christmas. You shouldn't shut
them.
Yeah. And we were told this. Somebody told me this when I was training, and I'm not a naturally smiley person anyway, but when you're around children, like, you know, constantly, like we are in the profession, it's really hard not to smile, because they are hilarious and they say things that are genuinely funny. And sometimes they do something that's really heartwarming, which just makes you smile anyway.
Yeah.
I remember this horrid, horrid specimen turned around to me and said, "Don't smile until Christmas. Don't show them who you are until Christmas. Get them under control, then you can be yourself." And I thought, that's so unhealthy. That's so damaging.
Should they be seen and not heard?
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. And that's when I thought, maybe this person who said that had been so long in the game and become so disillusioned with what they were doing. But either way, it's terrible advice. It's so misguided. It's not. There should never be an element of fear in the classroom. Obviously, discipline and authority, totally agree. But fear and suppressing happiness, that's no. It's not something that I'm game for, to be honest.
No, not at all. I mean, I could totally see that. I think that would put you off if you're a young child, you're at school, and yeah, I wouldn't want to be in a classroom if, you know, I was scared of my teacher and I thought he was going to shout at me or frown at me or be, you know, just generally quite hostile. That's very odd. What are there any other kind of common myths and fallacies that are thrown around at you then?
It might make me unpopular amongst my colleagues, but I will happily admit that most of them are predicated on the idea that you have to like, it's everything or nothing with teaching for some people. It either envelops you and it's your entire life. You sleep, breathe, obviously eat, and it's all about teaching and education. And that's absolutely fine for some people. If that's what you need to do, fill your boots. But you need to step away from that. You need, what's the word? You need an outlet. You need something that isn't education, something that isn't classroom related, because you burn out. And there are lots of people who, teachers who are 15 years younger than me, have been doing it for 3 years, and bless them, they're working 60, 70 hours a week, but they can't maintain that. So they just get driven to the ground. So one of the myths I refuse to accept is the more hours you put in, the more dedicated you are. And I just think it's something that you can gain from working elsewhere is you don't work. You can work smart and not hard, which doesn't mean cutting corners. It just means that don't spend 60, 70 hours at work, because at the end of the day, nobody's going to pat you on the back for it when you are off stressed or tired, or, you know, you can't face the place anymore. And that happens on a regular basis. But that, again, I think that's influence of maybe management or the pressure of, you know, what society expects of teachers. But it's a load of tosh. It really is.
Yeah, it certainly sounds it. I mean, I'm just trying to get my head around that, of just being, keeping your head in the game that often. I think in any profession would be exhausting. I mean, especially as a teacher as well. I can't imagine that's healthy for anybody. So what do you use then to kind of take your head out of it?
To be quite honest, there are, obviously before, when things were normal in the good old days, I used to play rugby, which was fantastic. Because I suffer from manic depression as well. So I need constant stimulation. I need constant, I need my mind to be working all the time. So I will try anything. I tried stand-up at one point when I lived in Birmingham.
Wow.
That was interesting. I tried to learn instruments. I read, love cooking. And back, obviously, again, back when things were normal, I used to love just going to gigs. And, you know, I spent a lot of that time with Mark and Ben, who, you know, we used to get to download any gigs you could find. And it was such a nice release, because neither Mark nor Ben are in that field, that professional sphere. So we don't have to talk about classrooms, don't have to talk about education. And that was a real nice break, real nice break. But now it's just a case of just anything, really, anything to... not only keep your love for the job alive, but not to allow it to turn into an obsession, because it's easily done.
No, I suppose not. I mean, something I'm curious about. So with your current age range, do you go through different classes, or are you sort of fairly, like, you've got a couple and that's kind of your core group, or do you kind of cycle through quite a few different classes through the week?
Well, at the moment, we have the same 25, 26 children. And that we have them for the whole academic year. Normally you do stay in the year group if you're doing a good job. But yeah, I've always taught year four. So I'll have the same children for the entire academic year. But at the moment, I've not had a class in this school that I'm working at for a full academic year yet, obviously because of COVID and, you know, lockdowns. But yeah, it's not a long time. It sounds like a long time to spend with the same group of people for 7 hours a day, but July soon enough rolls around and you genuinely miss them, even the ones that make you cry because they terrorize you. You miss them because you develop a bond with all of them.
Yeah, no, of course. Actually, yeah, you've led me on to my next real question. So yeah, I think it's the elephant in the room that we have to address. How has this current year and the lockdowns that we're going in and out of all the times, how's that affected you and your role?
Initially, it was, so this, well, 12 months ago, I think, was the first one, if I'm correct. It didn't really affect us that much. We were still in school, still getting things ready for key worker group children, vulnerable children. And then we started developing our online teaching. And it was fine because I was in school and there was lots to do. This time around, it's far more difficult to process because, and I'll try not to get too political about it, but when you know that they know it's coming, but they don't tell you, and 9 o'clock the night before they tell you you've got to provide all these extra lessons and provide online support, the government have no idea the pressure that puts under, like, for me it wasn't an issue, but for heads of department, it's been a real tough one this year, this time, because we were expecting to do one thing and we were doing another, and we're in school for a day after the Christmas holiday, which is just pointless. And it's tough. More importantly, it's really tough for the children.
Yeah, I was going to say, so have you been doing a lot of online lessons and things like that for them?
Yeah, we provide everything that we would have done in school, we provide online. But then we are, the area that we live in is quite, it's a strange setup. There are extremes of socioeconomic backgrounds. There's really wealthy children, and there are children in families from disadvantaged backgrounds. So some of them have access to tablets and laptops, some of them don't. So we have quite a small uptake on online learning. And it's a shame because I know the children, some of the children really like to learn. They love the routine. They like just communicating with their classmates. And this has put such a massive strain on their emotional well-being. And this again will make me unpopular with parents and teachers alike, but children can miss a year of education. There are refugees who arrive in this country have missed 6 years in education and still manage to, you know, graduate university. It's not the education that's the problem that they're missing out. It's the emotional development, the support they get from being around children their own age. But they are so robust. They're so flexible, and they are an example. They really are. And when it gets to the adults, all you have to do is look at the children, how they're behaving. It reminds you just how awesome they are.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That's such a lovely way of looking at it, Benny. And yeah, I do agree with you. What you're saying there is ultimately, yeah, kids will bounce back.
Yeah.
If they have to, they will, you know, particularly at younger ages, as you say, they're so malleable and so quick to pick things up, just like a little sponges, really.
Yeah.
So if that means they have to miss out for a little bit until everything's safe again, I guess so be it. But yeah, the emotional development is quite interesting. So you've already sort of touched upon it, really, but I think personally that's a role that a teacher plays that is, I think, it's either well overlooked. So, you know, an example of your former colleague saying, you know, don't smile, or we go so far in the other direction,
yeah,
that people are too worried, you know, and there's a lot of fear around it. So my question to you is, how do you kind of balance that? How do you see your role in a sort of child's emotional development when you're at school?
It's
a big question.
You know, it is, but it's a really good question. And I wish I had a better way of putting it, apart from it, trial and error. Over 6 years, there have been times I've treated every child the same, and that's a huge mistake. I've tried not raising my voice and not being authoritative, and it's taken me 6 years to realise you can do both, but it's about understanding each individual child. And I say this constantly, not just in regards to school, but it's not a one size fits all. What works with one child may not work with the next. And the one thing that's really helped is doing a bit of extra reading and research about the development of children emotionally. Now, I'm incredibly lucky. I came from a household where both my parents were there. I had a, what I would consider to be a healthy, normal upbringing. I'll say it again, I shouldn't say normal, but you know what I mean? Like a standard, you know, upbringing.
Yeah.
No, no, what you mean. No major issues or trauma for me. Yeah. So it's quite easy for me to get lost in that, that every child has had that when they really haven't. And some children go through more before they're five than most adults go through their, in their entire lives.
That's true.
But it's about, well, for me, if I could put it simply, it's just about listening to them. And even though, don't get me wrong, when they are 3 foot off the floor and they're talking to you about Minecraft or how you, one of them is convinced that I'm his dad, which is not possible. It's really hard to listen to them, but there are times when they say things and you think, right, okay, so I'll make sure I log that. I'll make sure I, you know, I remember that next time I'm talking to them. And it is just a process of getting to know them individually. And I'm definitely not any of their dads, any of them.
Yeah, we should just put that as a disclaimer.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
I'll put that above the show notes when I sort of start the intro, if you like.
Just, please do. Please
just
do.
Just to clarify, Benny is not any child's.
Please do. That would help me massively.
That's fine. So I didn't think this would sort of take this road, but okay, fine. No, I love what you said there about getting to know them on an individual basis, because that's so true. I mean, we can all think of examples where, yeah, teachers don't do that. You know, I can think of a few off the top of my head where, you know, we've had family and stuff that have had learning difficulties or things like that. And, you know, I think every child learns differently anyway.
Yeah.
And we've had, you know, teachers that have just outright dismissed that before now, that have been like, oh, well, no, it's fine. I'll just keep doing what I'm doing. And it's like, well, no, you know, this kid's struggling here. It's your responsibility to make sure that they keep up. And obviously that's not easy, especially when you've got up to 30 kids in a classroom. So how do you sort of stay on top of that then? Do you kind of make a point each year to spend a little bit of time with them one-on-one?
Just to go back to the point you made about it's difficult to, so we call it differentiation, you know, when you give the work that matches the ability. But that's our job, and there are loads of teachers that moan. Do you know what? Tell you what we'll say. Our profession, I think, has the highest percentage of moaners, and it's quite surprising, because it's not. Yeah. Nobody gets into teaching and then goes, oh my god, I didn't realise I'd have to mark all these books. Or
it's
ridiculous. But yeah, it's tough. It's a tough task. But if you want them to be happy to come to school, you have to make sure that they can access the work. And sometimes that takes months and months of kind of digging away and asking them, you know, are you okay, or can you see the board? And then sometimes it can be putting a letter in the incorrect place, and you then go, okay, that makes sense. Or it can be absolutely anything, but once you've understood what the obstacle is, there are so many things you can do as a teacher to help that child. And yeah, it's a tough ask if you've got 30 children and 10% of them need this and 20% of them need something difficult. And it is, that's our job. And if we can't do that and make sure every child is catered for, then we should probably look elsewhere.
Yeah, no, it's definitely is, as you say, that's kind of your role, I suppose, is to keep an eye out for them in that regard. So I love that you've, again, as you said at the start, you've got into this because it's something you care about, and you obviously have the right mindset and attitude to it. So I guess to anyone out there who's listening and is thinking about going down this road, what would you say are kind of like the key things they need to keep in mind in order to be successful at it? Just from your sort of your experience doing this so far.
From my experience, I would strongly, strongly suggest work experience first, not school experience or teaching experience, work experience, because you will never work in a place like a school. It's insane. It is sometimes, I don't think I've gone through a day at a school without saying the phrase, that's mental, because it just happens. Like, and it can be something really crazy, or it can just be something like a change, a last minute decision. But yeah, I'd say go and get work experience in a non-educated environment, build up your tolerance of things. And then I'd read, and I wouldn't read anything by educators. I would read things by child psychologists. I would read things of anything that can give you an idea of where to start, because teaching is relatively straightforward. But the start of it is quite difficult. Like, how do I get this person to understand? How do I get this person to behave? And there are so many things you can do before you start learning how to be a teacher to get to that point. One of my very, very good friends is a teacher in a secondary school in the West Midlands, and he's constantly giving me books about how adults change in learning environments. And when I read those kind of things, it's almost like a head slapper. Oh, you know, I've been doing this and I should be doing that. But these things are not written by educators. They're written by sociologists, psychologists, and it's far more rewarding than just reading a book by a teacher that tells you how to teach, because that's not, no one learns that way, being told something. They learn by either doing or being shown how to do it. So I would say just read as much, get some work experience, don't watch Bad Education or Teachers or what's the other one that's terrible? Don't go in pie-eyed thinking that it's going to be, you know, Dead Poets Society.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the go-to, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, my go-to was Coolio, Gangster's Paradise. I thought it was going to be like that film that Michelle Pfeiffer was in, but...
Wow, that's a reference.
Yeah, it really wasn't. Don't go into it pie-eyed, because you'll get the shock of your life. You really will. Just get some experience. And if you can... Try to go into an educational setting without being teacher trained first. Just maybe going as a TA or anything like that. Just so you can see what it's like there, because a lot of teachers don't see things from the point of view of TAs or site managers or dinner ladies, and that's when a lot of the issues start.
Wow, that's so interesting that you've gone down that road. And what I'm getting from you, just as a broad picture here, is the need to sort of take a step back from yourself and just be honest, I guess, in analysing your behaviour and what you're doing. I think that's probably good advice just in life, isn't it? Whatever your profession is, really, just to always keep an open mind and not get, like, tunnel vision.
Yeah, I'm not used to people being this complimentary. Harley, thank you very much. You call me sensible and honest. But I got here from... making a series of mistakes after mistakes and learning from them. And it's not easy. And I'd still do it now, where I do things, I think, oh, come on, that's going to be hard to scrub. But you learn from it. If you do it twice, it's a habit. If you do it three times, you're a moron.
that's very true. As a saying, I quite like, what was it? If enough people tell you that you're drunk, you should probably sit down. I quite like that expression. Yeah. I quite like that expression. It's like the most extreme end of it, but you're
absolutely.
Like, yeah, if enough people are telling you something, you should probably take it on board. But anyway, I'm curious then. So from your point of view, what is the most rewarding aspect of this job?
Day to day, children coming in with a smile on their face. Overall, it's knowing that when I go home, actually, I tell you, overall, I'd say at the end of the term, when I think that I have helped as many of them as I possibly could, I've not neglected any of them, and they see me in September and they still greet me with a smile and a wave, that means they're still happy to be in school. And that's incredibly rewarding. At the moment, for me, it's teaching EAL children. So the children that have got English as an additional language, I think it's more rewarding for them teaching me, because they are incredible, incredible examples of learners and children. We've got, at the moment, I think about 1 in 5 children are bilingual in this country, but in the county that I live in, it's quite high. And some of the children, the bilingual children, are just incredible. And especially this year, when I've gone in, some of them have given me cheat sheets. Like, one of them gave me a Russian cheat sheet, because his English wasn't great. My Russian, obviously, you know, it's not that good. He gave me a Russian to English cheat sheet. And my wife also helped me, because she's really good at, when I come home and I say things, she's very good at picking out the important parts, ignoring my crying and that. And she goes, well, maybe it's because... and when she does that, I do have a bit of a hissy fit. And then I take her advice on board And she, this is one of the things that she pointed out, was maybe it's a language issue. Oh, no, he's been in school for 2 years now. He should understand English. That's a bit naive of me, a bit ignorant. So I went in and he gave me his cheat sheet, and I trusted him that it was nothing rude or, you know, offensive. And it just built the relationship between us incredibly quickly. And he trusted me. I started to greet him in Russian and understood why he was behaving the way he was. And that was, I wouldn't trade that for anything. That was incredible. But then he still hasn't developed the right way to ask to go to the toilet. He just points and goes, "We," and then walks out of the room. I'm like, okay, we'll work on that. We'll work on that, buddy.
Yeah, you'll get to that.
You'll get to that.
That's a beautiful story, man. I mean, that's incredible. So is that something you do sort of separately then, teaching English?
No, that's just something that in our age range, you don't get a lot of opportunities to teach what I would consider to be basic English. It's the,
okay,
I hate to use the phrase, but it's stuff that they won't use again. And I know there is this, and it harks back to, you know, the Industrial Revolution, when they based teaching on maths, science and something else, because that's what they needed. They needed people, yes, to build, they needed people to develop agriculturally. But now children don't really need that. I mean, yes, it is. I do want them to know what a verb is, and I want them to understand how to structure a sentence, but it's not as prevalent as it once was. But then when I talk to these children who are bilingual, I'm like, you're eight, you've come to this country, you've learned everything in a second language. So by that age, you are already more useful than I am. And that to me is incredible. And it just makes you feel so, it makes you feel good, but it also makes you question, well, am I doing enough? Can I still learn at this age? But yeah, they are, and I keep reminding them that if they do get into positions of power, whether it be politically or, you know, famous, to remember me and how nice I was to them.
Yeah.
But I doubt they will.
Well, you never know. You never know. I mean, I think we can all, you know, think back to teachers that had a really positive impact. I can certainly think of a few just off the top of my head now. Actually, I think one of them, my English teacher, I'm pretty sure Mr. Budge has gotten at least 3 shout outs on a podcast. just, well, 2 on here and 1 on another one I guested on, just because, you know, he got me to study Jaws and that was amazing. But, you know, it's little things like that. And there's plenty of others I can think of that, you're right, they have such a big impact.
Did you enjoy your school journey?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, I got on quite well. I always did. I think I did pretty well at school. And like when I was at that age that you're teaching, yeah, I remember some of the teachers that we had, and the ones that I really gravitated towards were the ones that always took a personal interest. Because I at that age, I think one I can think of the top of my head was, actually I was a little bit older, but I was in that kind of part of the school, was Mrs. Harding. I remember her. She was a really lovely lady, and she was just really sweet. And she'd always make a point to talk to every single one of us. She'd do things like, I remember this clearly now, once a week we used to sit down and she'd read a book, and we'd go through books like Michael Morpurgo and stuff like that. And she'd always make an effort to do voices and sort of put you in the scene. And that made you interested in reading as a kid, because then you'd be like, oh, brilliant, these books are amazing. And then my mum bought the set and we continue reading some of the other books at home. And it's little things like that that I look back on now and I think, yeah, that had a real impact. And it's so important that, you know, if she never smiled or never bothered to put that effort in, I probably wouldn't have become interested in things like that as time goes on. So, you know, I mean, we can all think of, I think, good teachers and bad teachers. And I agree with you. I think that the worst thing a teacher can do is be absent.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
I've had a few like that in the past that just, it feels like they're just reading a script, or, you know, whatever, they just don't care. And it can put you off a subject. Case in point, I had an electronics teacher that was just no good. And, you know, to the point where I got a B, and don't ask me how, because I remember being sat for that exam paper and thinking, I am woefully underprepared for this. Like, I have no idea what I'm looking at. And somehow I just blagged it. Which is not good advice for any kids listening if there are, but hopefully your teacher will be like Ben here and will actually like take the time to sit you down and go, what are you not understanding? What can I help you with? Because those are the ones that help you get the A's and stuff like that.
And funny enough, I'll shut up in a second, but my English teacher, Mr. Budge, again, the legend that he was, helped me get an A in, I think, in both sections of English, was language and literature.
Yeah.
And the one in language I was not expecting. And we talked about it. I remember like 2 weeks before I took the exam, because I used to just get B's, solid B's all the time. And I was like, yeah, I'm happy with that. And he's like, nah, you can get an A. You know, we can
do belief. That belief.
But honestly, I'll never forget, because we found out before coming into the class that like five of us had gotten an A. And one of my mates was like, I bet you got one. And I was like, nah. And I just walked into the class and he just I remember he stood up and just pointed at me and went, you. And I was like, excuse me? And it was a really nice moment. But yeah, he was an absolute legend. And yeah, it's stuff like that. It does stay with you. So have faith, Benny. I'm sure that one or two of the kids will remember you. And if they become celebrities or podcasters, you'll get a mention at some point.
I hope so. Or you know, a monetary sum would be fine for the psychological scars. I'm glad you said that about school, because there are so many things that I recall. And one of the best things that happened to me was a teacher who I didn't like or respect. I was taking, so I think back then it was called design and tech. So where you build. So, and I'm not,
yes.
I am not that kind of person. I can't build anything. I've always considered myself to be not a proper man because I don't know how to like fix an engine.
Benny, can I let you on a secret?
Yeah.
Neither can I.
That's awesome. That's what YouTube's for. That's what exactly. YouTube's for. Well, not exactly. For me. We'll get someone else to do it. I'm glad you said that. Yeah, I remember this teacher, and he was an absolute burk. He turned around to me, and I was making, or I thought I was making something helpful. I think it was a pencil holder, but I don't think it was supposed to be a pencil holder. And he turned around to me and says, you're a bit of a spaz, aren't you? And I was like,
what?
But bear in mind, though, this was, how old am I? This was 22 years ago. So they used to say a lot of things to the children back then.
And I was like, still.
Oh, but we just, it was just standard. He used to, well, I won't go into anything else.
I was going to say.
Called me a spaz. So I was like, okay, fair enough. And I remember leaving the classroom after that and bumping into the food technology teacher, who's this tiny Indian woman. And she was like, are you okay, Ben? And I was like, well, not really. You know, Mr. So-and-so just called me a spaz. So I join my class. So I went and did food technology. I was the only boy in the whole year who did it, but I loved it. It was incredible. And it was difficult because all the other boys were building like trowels or chairs and I was making cakes, but it was amazing. And she was like, she knew that I'd get grief, but the whole process, she was just really supportive and really helpful. And I, you know, really appreciate that. And she never called me a spaz. So, you know, progress.
That is massive progress. I mean, the bar is set pretty low, but that is, that's progress. Yeah. No, I love that. And I think that's what teachers should do, man. They should encourage you to pursue the things that you're interested in.
Yeah.
You know, and then they should sort of chime in on that a bit. Again, I know it's sometimes easier said than done when you've got lots of kids, and especially like, I know I'm thinking of secondary level as well, when you're cycling through different classes. I can understand that. But then I suppose like for you, so you obviously must do parent teacher evenings. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm assuming at that point, you know, before then you must be taking notes of the different kids and you know who's doing what, who's progressing. You've seen it all. So you should have a decent idea then of how they're getting on. So while we're on that subject, what do you make of parent-teacher evenings? I'm very curious. I've never had a teacher's perspective on this before.
I really enjoy them. I don't know whether that's because I've had I've not had very good jobs before and I love this job. I do like them because once you speak to a parent or a carer, it gives you such a more rounded idea of what a child is about. And I'll be really honest now, there is about 2% of all the parents that I've met that I would probably set on fire, but the rest of them that I've had interactions with are golden and they're trying their hardest, and I'm not a parent so I can't empathize nor sympathize. They're doing a good job, and when you speak to them and they say stuff like, oh, so and so is really upset because they don't understand their times tables, and you're like, oh, okay. And sometimes you'll end up with pages and pages and pages of information, but all that does is give you such a clear idea of what you're dealing with that child. And on the flip side of that, and I won't dedicate much time to it, but on the negative side of it, there are some parents who have this misunderstanding of my role. They think I should be this all singing, all dancing, teacher, carer, social worker, you know, everything.
Yeah.
That's a very, very small percentage, I'm glad to say. Most of the parents I've had dealings with are absolute heroes. They really are. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's absolutely true. And you're right. I mean, even as a younger kid, you sort of sense that. Some kids are kind of thrown into the class as, well, you'll be here and you won't bother me for 6 hours of a day, which I agree with you. I'm not going to go too much into that because that's a whole other issue. But I think it's nice to hear that you have that relationship because, yeah, I think that can be something I imagine for a parent. It can either be really daunting or it can be all right. It depends on what your kid's like, I suppose. Yeah. I mean, my point of view, I loved them. They were great because, like I said, I got on quite well in school. So for me, it was just sitting there and being told, yeah, he's doing fine. I'm like, sweet. But I know for other kids, like, you know, the one or two kids that would cause a bit of a ruckus at every class and you'd be sat there just watching them squirm as the teacher would be like, you know, rubbing their hands together, going, oh,
getting their notebook out. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now on 2 p.m. on March 14th, you did this.
Yeah.
You know, and you think, good luck. But do you ever get that sometimes then with, like, are there any kids that you're like, oh, I cannot wait to sit down with, or you just kind of like, whatever, who cares?
Yeah, I thankfully I've not been in a situation where a child has done something that I consider to be serious enough to warrant it being brought up in a parent's evening. There have been things that I'm concerned about, certainly. But then I some of my colleagues will note down things like, oh, you know, on the Monday they looked at me funny, on the Tuesday they didn't complete the work. And I just think, in the grand scheme of things, a parent wants to know three things: is the child happy, is the child progressing, and are they behaving? Now, behaviors, again, a broad subject, but what I deem to be bad behavior, they probably perceived to be, you know, acceptable. Now, I just think that you should, or I don't mean to go into the heavy details of it, but when you're talking to a parent, I would normally spend 9 minutes, 9.5 minutes telling them all the awesome things, and then the last 30 seconds I'll go, and the only thing I'm concerned about is A, B, and C, or, you know, they could just read a bit more, or, you know, don't bring guns into school, that kind of thing. That's a joke. Yeah. That's a joke.
He's failing the class. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I've not had to worry about. I mean, I've had some awkward conversations during term time where something has happened or I'm concerned about something. Thankfully, I don't. This is something that I'd really like to learn more about. I don't know whether it's because of my gender. I don't know whether parents in particular, react to me differently because I'm a male teacher. Now, I've seen how some parents react to female teachers, and I just think, you know, that's unacceptable. And I don't. I think
how so? If you don't mind me asking.
Well, I've been in situations where I've had to step in and say to a parent, you know, you can't talk to her like that, regardless of your opinion on her professional status. She's a human, and sometimes the parents, if they see a young female, and I'm not just saying it's the dads. You know, some moms can be like it as well. They tend to try and bully them or speak down to them. I've seen it happen so many times, and thankfully, I work with some really bloody minded teachers who refuse to be spoken to like that. But unfortunately, I also know some really young teachers who have been spoken to in such a disgusting way that if someone spoke to me like that, it'd be a very short conversation.
Yeah.
But I think
that's fair enough.
I think gender has a lot to do with that, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's still an issue, I think, sadly, across many professions.
And, yeah.
That is sad to hear, but I hope that's a lot less frequent as time goes on for you. But so from your perspective then, as a bloke, I was actually curious about this, and I was thinking today, like, do we even bring this up? Because it's a little bit dark, but I feel like it's worth discussing. Do you think that has a lot to do with perhaps fear that's put into parents?
Possibly. I've been told that I'm quite imposing, which I don't intend to be that way. I've always just considered myself to be quite moody. but I think it can be misconstrued. But I think there might be a level of that to it, and which is unfortunate because, you know, there's no real reason for them to be fearful. I suppose my surname doesn't help. My surname doesn't help at all. I mean, when they hear it, they think it's a joke. But no, I think there is an element there, which is it's unfortunate, and I wish there wasn't. But yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, because it's something that, I mean, I find that I'm not a teacher, but just as a male, as an adult male, I sometimes feel uncomfortable around children.
Oh,
and you know, yeah. That side of things as well, I think is. It's really, I was talking to a friend of mine about it the other day, and it's like, we're even to a point where if you're in a supermarket and you see a kid crying, you're almost like, do I do something? Do I go and, like, your first instinct is to go and be like, hey, are you okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Get on their level and say, you know, where's your mum? Let's find the help desk. But you almost feel like awkward doing that, because you're like, well, I'm a man, and if I approach this child, are people going to say something? And I did crowd control volunteering at an event years and years ago, and we were all given that advice, like, if you see a kid, you need to grab a woman, which makes you feel even weirder. You've got to go to a complete strange woman and be like, hi, can you help me assist this child? And it's like, is that not worse? But that's what you have to do, because it puts people's minds at ease. Now, I'm assuming as a teacher, you're given an awful amount of trust. But do you ever come up against anything like that? Or any sort of parents being really funny around you and you thinking, hang on a minute, like, what's going on here?
I am so glad you brought that up. As a white male, there's very little you can do to upset me or offend me. I am.
Yeah, we have an easy ride. We'll say
we really do. There are very, very few things I have to worry about. And one of the things that has always come up, and it has come up since, I would say, since I was about 28, 29, is my reasons for being in education. Now, sometimes people will just be very coarse about it, and they'll come straight out and they'll be like, oh, you know, they'll question my sexuality or my intentions. Sometimes they're a little bit more guarded than that. For example, I've been CRB checked more than anyone that I know, but it's just a case of when you go to a new school, sometimes it do, sometimes they don't. It just depends. But I found out that I've been CRB checked 7 times in the last 6 years, which is ridiculous. But I put that down to the fact that we move around a lot because of my wife's job. But on the other hand, there are times when people have said stuff to me, like a good example, when we go swimming, sometimes a staff shortages, and I'd had to go in the girls' changing room. Now, for me, it's no different than me standing in the boy. It's like actually, it's easier because the girls just chat and get changed. The boys are swinging from the lights and trying to escape. Starting a revolution. So it's easier for me.
Yeah.
The first time it happened, and this was at a previous school, I walked up to the girls' changing room, then a TA stopped me. Said, you can't go in there. But I have to because there's no adult in there. Oh, you can't go in there. You're a bloke. I said, yeah, but there's a female in the males changing rooms. I don't see what the problem is. And then I got really, really offended then, which is a very hard thing to do. And I want to know the reasons for it. And in the back of their mind, and it is something that unfortunately is quite dominant in society, it's they can't get past the psyche of, oh, you're a bloke, girls of a certain age in certain environments. It's a bit, I'm like, you have to get past that, or else this will always dominate our thinking, and it shouldn't. And there's no issue with for example, I was asked to leave a classroom while girls were getting changed for a rounders club that I was taking, and I refused. And then and afterwards, when I was spoken to, when I explained my reasons for refusal, they were like, okay, but these girls are, you know, getting changed. And I kept repeating myself. I said, the more you do this, the more you perpetuate the idea that there's something nefarious about me being in the classroom.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose because kids pick up on stuff like that, don't they? And it's like, it's one thing that I think it's a typical thing we see in our culture and society in general, is this overcorrection.
Yeah.
You know, where like, people have made horrendous mistakes in the past. And so, CRB, you know, checks, fine. Yeah, whatever, do what you have to do, you know. But then it gets to a point where, like you say, if you're trying to do your job and you're being hindered, and then I imagine that can be quite off-putting as well for perhaps other guys who think, you know, I want to be a teacher, but if they feel like they're going to be constantly scrutinized or, you know, looked at funny, so, oh, why do you want to teach kids? It's like, because I care.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think it's a rewarding job. It's, yeah, I think that level of mistrust is just, it's too much.
It is. And you alluded to it earlier on. Basic human kindness isn't gender specific or race specific. Like you mentioned that, you know, if you saw a child that was upset or distressed, your initial reaction would be, you know, I want to make sure that child's okay. But in the back of your mind, you'd think, no, because someone looks over and sees an adult male and a crying child. They don't think guardian and child. And it's, you know, we've all been, I think we've all made mistakes before and judgments, but this one is something that I think because it affects me, it affects me directly. I get quite irate about it. And yeah, I just, I know there's reasons for it, and I totally understand the societal pressures and that, like you've said as well, mistakes that people have made. But I think if a child went home and said that Mr. Slaughter had to leave a class today while we're getting changed, that would strike more alarm than anything else.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly right. That's going to ring alarm bells and cause more issues than you know, anything else in the world. But, you know, I don't want to dwell on the negative. But yeah. I just think it was an interesting point to consider, because I think with all things, you've got to look at the big picture.
Yeah.
But I am genuinely glad that things like that don't put you off from doing your job.
Oh, no.
And sort of give you you're happy just to kind of work through it. That's awesome.
I think that I'm assuming we'll stay in touch after this, and you'll get to know me, and you'll understand. Yes. You'll understand a few things about me, Harley. I love arguing, and I'm always wrong. and being wrong and liking arguing is a bad combination. So if someone puts me in a situation where I feel like I need to argue, then I will happily do it. But I'm never right. Apart from this thing that I think I'm right about, which is, you know, it's treat everyone the same.
Well, yeah, I think we can all get on board with that. But yeah. I think that's amazing what you've just said. I'm assuming you don't get into too many arguments with the 8-year-olds, or you try not to.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Or do you just crush them?
No, like, no, these are ferocious warriors. One of them was grilling me about my accent. I'm from Birmingham originally, and I did try to hide it. sometimes it will creep out. Now, I said the word, I'm going to try and say it properly now, tortoise. All right, so I was saying tortoise because I'm from Birmingham. So I'm going tortoise. And one of the more astute children in the class said, are you having a breakdown? I said, no. I'm talking about this creature that's on the board. And they said, tortoise. I was like, no, it's a tortoise. So the whole class started going, tortoise. So that, I just felt like quitting then. But they've got a good sense of humour. They really have.
Yeah, I think that's probably quite important, isn't it? Is not to take yourself too seriously in the job.
No.
I think with kids, like I remember, particularly substitute teachers in classrooms, like if you showed weakness or fear, that was it. You were done. Like yeah. You've lost that class. So yeah, if you can laugh at yourself, like the teachers I loved, if they could just take a joke or they fire a little quip back at you or something, it was, you know, you'd enjoy the banter and you'd be like, okay, this is a safe space. Whereas if they sort of, if they freeze, like that's it, you're done.
Yeah,
you've lost us for the year.
I get my own back though, because I spend the whole day breaking wind in the classroom and blaming it on all the children. So I'm winning every day. I'm winning.
Is that a secret weapon then for teachers to?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Brilliant! I love that.
I've just ruined all of the good things I've just said by that simple sentence.
Yeah, people listening are telling you, "Oh, he seems very balanced." Oh, never mind. He farts around children and blames it on them. Oh dear.
I'll tell you what, you've asked some superb questions today. I've really, really enjoyed about this.
I'm glad you have.
I was really nervous. It's something that's really important to me, but I was just, you know, you don't want to, you want to come across well, but I don't want to upset people with my own opinions on something which is quite close to a lot of people's hearts.
Well, the way I look at it, right, is when I want to do this show, is it gives people an idea of why somebody loves a certain subject. But of course, that person's opinions are entirely their own.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're out there listening and you have a different viewpoint, that's fine. You know, you're entitled to that. No one's saying it's not. So, and no, I've loved this. I've loved this conversation. It's fascinating to me, all of this. I think it's something that, like you say, given the current climate that we're in at the minute, there's a lot of discussion around education and around the importance of teachers. So I think it's great to hear from somebody who loves what they do and is clearly passionate about it and believes in it. And you have nothing to be nervous about. It's absolutely awesome. If anything, I'm the one that's nervous sometimes, like doing these conversations of like, is this going to trail off or am I, you know, have I lost something? But actually, no, it's great.
It's been really enjoyable.
Yeah, I'd love to know, is there anything else about this subject you'd love to bring out?
I suppose, I think the only thing that I would mention, and only because of what's going on, is that there's been a tendency recently to demonize teachers in regards to lockdown and online learning and et cetera, et cetera. We have to accept that this is a really unique situation we're in, pandemic and lockdown number 4, 5, 6, whatever it might be. And you have to understand that 99.9% of teachers are trying to do their very, very best, just like in any profession. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But they're put in a situation where they've been demonized a little bit by not just news, but politicians shifting the blame. And I don't know what it's like to homeschool 1 children, 3, 4, or 5. I can imagine it's really stressful. But I'd really like people just to take a step back and just, you know, appreciate that most teachers are trying their hardest to provide, you know, online learning. It may not always work, and it might be an absolute nightmare for some, but we're trying our best. We really are.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more with that, mate. I mean, recent announcements when, like you say, it all switched around, so it happened so fast. And yeah, my first thought was parents and teachers. I thought, flip, that's going to be, wow. that's a lot to process.
I agree. And I felt so bad for the parents. Because you imagine 9 o'clock, your children are probably in bed if they're primary age.
Yeah, yeah.
The morning, waking up. And then no school.
Yeah.
And then maybe not being able to go to work. And there's so much stress going on. And I just think it's important not to turn on each other. And I don't just mean teachers or parents or kids. Just let's not turn on each other. And let's just remember that it's a unique situation. We're all threaders. We're all under a lot of pressure, everyone. So we just be kind to each other.
Absolutely. And that's a lovely sentiment to end it on. And of course, this will pass.
When it does,
you know, when we see the back of it, yeah, schools teaching it. It's such a valuable commodity. So thank you for sharing your thoughts on it. I've loved it.
Thank you so much for having me and listening and asking some absolutely ace questions. I've really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you. This is very loosely improvised, so I'm glad you have good questions.
It's awesome. Thank you.
And of course, with having, you know, Mark, Ben and Gemma on, I couldn't leave out Ben. That would be wrong.
You're too kind. Wrong.
Although I've noticed they've at the time of recording have just posted that they seem to be doing a little reunion, and I noticed the fourth screen was missing. I was sort of very outraged, but no, I'm only kidding.
I've tried. I've got legal representatives involved. I want to be on the team, but apparently there's just not enough room for two Jaws loving beardies.
Oh dear. Well, we'll have to fix that. But no, it's really cool. So for anyone who doesn't know or is listening, it looks like Skip to the End maybe making a return soon, which is really cool. I'm really happy for those guys.
Yeah. Well overdue, and I think it'll be a huge celebration when that episode drops.
I know. Yeah, that's awesome. But so more importantly, Benny, where can the good people find you?
They can find me on Twitter at blamethrower83. I've also got a podcast which I do with my wife called, on Twitter it's at Sense Numbers, but it's Sense in Numbers podcast, which is a podcast to discuss mental health illnesses and support. Don't look for me on Facebook. I am on there, but I don't go on there because it's the devil.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't know about that podcast. That sounds incredible. I'll have to go and check that out.
It's not easy listening, but it's
no, but
we're trying to help.
Yeah, I think those conversations are extremely important. So yes, I will definitely be putting some links into that.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
No worries. In that case, Benny, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me, Harley. Been fantastic.
And there we have it. Another fantastic conversation with another fantastic guest. Thank you so much to Benny for coming onto the show and talking to me about teaching. I really hope you guys at home enjoyed that just as much as I did. I thought it was wonderful. There was so much insight and passion and just all the good stuff we look for here at Fundamentals. And if you want to hear more from Benny, then by all means check out the links in the description of this podcast, including his most recent appearance on Skip to the End, their lockdown special, which he kept under wraps on this episode, but I'll forgive him because, well, it's Benny. Also, the Sense in Numbers podcast, I have since listened to it. He's right, and it's not easy listening, but it shouldn't be, really. When it comes to mental health, we need to have very open, candid, and raw discussions, and that's exactly what he and Gemma do on that podcast. So obviously approach at your own discretion, but it's well worth checking out. And lastly, if you are enjoying this podcast, then by all means, come and find me on Twitter and Instagram. Both handles are at FundamentalsPod. If you'd like to leave a review, 5 stars preferably, in your favorite app of podcasting, listening, does that make sense? Yeah, please do so. I mean, that sentence alone is worth 5 stars, right? Anyway, that's enough from me. I'll be back again in a couple weeks' time with a completely different guest on a completely different subject. So, until then, stay tuned and stay safe.